Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know, a show empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. I'm so glad you're joining me today. As always, I have a fantastic guest and a wonderful conversation in store for you. I always like to welcome people who may be listening for the very first time. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining me on The Love Code. Hope you'll be back every week. And if you would like to get all of these shows sent to your inbox so you don't have to miss listening live, then just go to my website, drcherylselman.com, or my Facebook page, What Women Must Know. I post these shows on a regular basis, so all the archive shows are sent right to you. And I have a second show on the network called The Love Code, and that's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. But if you can't make that show live, then all of my shows will be sent to you. All you have to do is opt in to my website, Dr. Cheryl Selman, or like me over at my Facebook page, What Women Must Know. You know, I really find the very best guests to have on the show that will inspire, uplift, and help transform your lives. So please join in and be sure to listen every week. I learn so much from all of my guests, and I'm sure everyone listening will also be learning so much as well. So today we have another one of those fantastic conversations. We're going to be exploring gender physics, how to unlock the energy you never knew you had to get the results you want, with my guest, Betty Ann Hege. So let me just share a little bit about Betty Ann. She is a widely recognized thought leader in gender dynamics, having been published in Inc. magazine, Apple News, Huffington Post, and The Good Men Project. An award-winning speaker, author, and mentor, she is also a corporate director, a philanthropist, and a former senior vice president of the Potash Corp., which is now called Nutrien, the world's largest fertilizer supplier. Betty Ann currently serves as a director for the Toronto International Film Festival, where she chairs the philanthropy committee, and has also been on the boards of the Canadian Chamber of Commerce, the Saskatoon Regional Economic Development Authority Incorporated, and the Canadian Wheat Board. She also, I just have to say, has some other really interesting qualities. She's the author of the book, Gender Physics, which is Unlock the Energy You Never Knew You Had to Get the Results You Want, and a really dynamic woman who's very passionate about supporting and empowering women and finding our balance of our genders with in our lives, in our workplace. So it's a fascinating conversation, one that I'm really curious to explore with her. So first of all, let me welcome my guest, Betty Ann Hege, today on the show. Hello, Betty Ann.
Hello, Cheryl. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you're so welcome. You're such an inspiring woman. You've accomplished so much in your life. You've achieved many of your goals and probably exceeded some of them. And here you are at a point in your life really giving back and helping so many others in so many ways. So it's always fascinating for me to have conversations with such a successful, dynamic woman as yourself. So I'm so happy to have you on the show.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here. And let me say that, like all forms of giving, you always get a lot more than you give.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and there's something about giving and returning and helping others that just soothes and heals the soul, because it's the most gratifying thing we can ever do is support others in the many ways that we may choose to do so. So
you know,
I know
absolutely.
That's what you're doing in your life.
I was a corporate executive, as you said in my bio, in your very kind bio, thank you. And when I retired, I worked in a primarily male-dominated environment, as most women do, because most environments are men at the top. And my environment was particularly male-driven because it was mining and fertilizer, when those are fields that tend to have a lot more men. And that influenced me in two ways. One, it caused me to realize how important it is the qualities that women bring to an organization. And I know that I brought good value by taking a different perspective often than the what was happening in the boardroom because it was mostly men. And so I then wanted to, and I also knew how difficult it was to be heard. And I wanted to encourage other women to get to the decision-making table and to get their voices heard. And so that is why I formed a mentorship program for women at my alma mater, because I wanted to help women that are already out working, because it's very easy to get discouraged and not to want to carry on. What I basically say is that women go to university. Universities are meritocracies. And so a woman gets to be the head of the business school team, and they go off to nationals and they win. And she has a bunch of men on that team, you know, young men, these are all university students, and they listen to her. And so those young women think, you know, I don't think there's really a need for feminism. The world is equal. And then what happens is they get out and they start working. And they find that those men that were on their business school team are being naturally mentored by the men in their organization. And as young women, they're finding that the same men that used to listen to them on that business school team, suddenly when they're putting forth an idea, it's being glossed over. And then another man picks up and says that idea, and everybody says, oh, yeah, let's do it. And she doesn't get any credit for the idea at all. And I then find that I'm out giving a speech somewhere, and she's been out working for a few years, and she comes up to me after the speech and says, what happened? Like, my world changed, and suddenly I am not viewed as having as much value. And so my response is, yes, let me help you. Let me give you some advice. And so then I found out that I was mentoring more people than I could really handle. And I went to our university, and I said, I've got a model for a mentorship program. I will fund it if you will administer it. And we've been doing that for 10 years, and I've had nearly 2,500 women be involved in this program in one manner or fashion. We have mentorship for women, we have professional development, and we have networking. And interestingly enough, when we came up with that model, it was just an intuitive, we think this is the best way to help women. And in that decade, there's been research come out from the Kennedy School of Business that says it's not enough to just give women professional development or just give them mentorship or just give them networking. You need to do all three. And so that really then has, it's good validation for what we were already doing intuitively. And I am really feeling like it has made a big difference to these women. And I can tell you from my perspective, there is nothing more gratifying than watching these women feel like they're coming into their own, and they find their voice, and they're willing to go out and face the world and present their truth and be who they are. And so when I say that giving back is very gratifying, this has been so gratifying for me as having been a corporate executive to help other people find their way in on that minefield for women where I think they get very little margin for error.
So, well, there certainly has been a different standard for women in the corporate world. I haven't been in the corporate world, but having worked with women and gender and understanding the feminine power and understanding how those energies play out in my own life and in my own work, I think one of the greatest challenges for women is how do you function in a business environment, be it corporate or any business environment, or even in your own business, and do it in a way that is operating from the needs of the feminine, the needs of being a woman, as opposed to following a male model. Because a male model, and we'll talk about this, is very driven, right? They're just focused on the goal and work hard all the time to accomplish it. Women, by their nature, are more cyclical. They have cycles, and they have cycles when they are alert and sharp and on top of the game, and cycles that require them to go inward and be more nurturing to themselves as well as to others. So operating in a male model world is really, I would say, harming to women. And because I look at it from a health perspective, I can see where women just get burnt out much more quickly because they're not operating out of their own needs as a woman and understanding their needs as a woman. So can we, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I was actually a very good example of that, Cheryl. In my book, Gender Physics, I talk about the attributes that we would typically consider to be masculine and typically consider to be feminine. And exactly as you've described, the masculine attribute is to be driven, to really get things done. And the feminine attribute is usually to be more reflective and to sit back and sort of say, what is the right thing to be doing and when is the right time to be doing it? And what I discuss in my book is the importance of knowing when to drive and when to sit back, and then to use them in a combination that's balanced so that you do drive when you need to, but you also take time to reflect. And I've got lots of actually kind of humorous stories that we can circle around back to about when men didn't do that, and you know, it took women to step in and show them how to reflect and how much more important it was. But for me personally, I went to work as a young female executive in that male-dominated environment that I described earlier of mining and fertilizer, and I really pretended to be a man. And you know, in the early 80s, or in the 80s, when women were just being accepted outside the secretarial pool into the bottom rungs of management and were trying to work their way up, women, we joke amongst ourselves now, but you know, we went to work with power suits that had big padded shoulders like we were football players that needed that protection. And we all wore a little sort of bows at our necks because that was our version of a tie. And, you know, it was important to show the men that you could work as hard and as long as they did. And in the midst of all of this, I had two babies. So I worked with both of my children. I worked until the day before I had the child, till I went into the hospital. I mean, I was overdue with my first child, and I was still working. And I went into the hospital the middle of the night. By 9 o'clock in the morning, I'd had the baby, and I phoned the office, and my secretary said, "You're probably tired, and you're probably telling me you're just going to be a little late this morning." And I said, "No, I'm phoning to tell you I've had the baby."
Oh my God.
Well, you know, and so then I went back, you know, as women do, 6 weeks later, and I traveled a lot in my job. So I had these visions or versions of what was a good mother, which is that you nurse your baby, and these visions or versions of what it was to be a good executive, which is you're on call and you're ready to go on the plane the minute that there's a crisis for the company. And it was hard to reconcile those two. And so what I was doing was, you know, packing up. I had a nanny, I had a husband who was involved. I would pack up and leave on the spur of the moment. And I was nursing my baby. I was distracting milk while I was on the road so that I could come home and continue to nurse the baby. And then I would freeze the milk and have it in the freezer so that it could be fed to the baby when I wasn't there. And, you know, I did this. Then I, 18 months later, had another baby and did exactly the same thing. So I had really run myself ragged for that entire period, and I ended up getting mono.
And a surprise.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a surprise at all. So I went to the doctor, who was like, "Okay, mono is 3 weeks to 3 months. You're going to be tired." Well, at the end of 3 months, it hadn't even. I was just as tired as I was three months earlier, and I continued to work. But I was my immune system was so low that if anybody in the office got sick, if they got a cold or a flu, I immediately caught it. And when I caught it, I went into all of the acute stages of my mono. And I was found that I was light sensitive. I had to have the drapes pulled. I would sleep for like 2 days solid. And when I finally woke up and got the energy to go to the kitchen and get a glass of orange juice or flip through a magazine, I was so exhausted, I went back to sleep again. And I kept going to the doctor and saying, I'm still sick. All of the glands in my body are swollen. So I'm clearly trying to fight something off. And she would check every box and send me off to the lab, and all of the results would come back negative. And she would say, well, you know, if you were a different kind of person, I would think maybe this was depression. But I know you're not a depressed kind of person. And I said, well, no. I mean, I'm getting depressed because I'm sick all the time. But I don't really think depression started this. So finally, after that baby was born, I did nothing but work and come home and sleep on the couch. And my husband took care of those children. And all I did was I couldn't accept a social engagement. Finally, the doctor sent me off to the infectious disease department at the university. And they said, you are going to be our first diagnosis in the province for Epstein-Barr syndrome. Now, Epstein-Barr was the precursor to chronic fatigue. So it came out in the medical journals of January of 1983, and I was diagnosed in May of 1983. And so it was a bit of a good news, bad news story. The good news was I had a diagnosis. I wasn't crazy. The bad news was there was nothing they could give me for it. There was no medication. So I decided, well, if there's nothing that Western medicine can do for me, there must be something I can do for myself. And I went off to the library, and this is before the days of the internet, so I had nothing I could get from the internet. And I checked out every book I could find on people who had cured themselves of terminal diseases. And I was looking for a common thread. And what I found is that they meditated and visualized themselves healthy. So I thought, okay, I have to learn how to meditate. Well, there was very little on meditation this was 1985, not 1983. There was very little on meditation in 1985. And so I, again, went back to the library and found 5 books. And I read them all. And I taught myself how to meditate using those 5 books. And every day, twice a day for 20 minutes, I meditated and visualized my body healthy. And I can tell you that within 6 weeks, I was noticing a difference. Within 6 weeks, I found that I was able to accept a social engagement without getting tired or sick. And within 3 months, if someone in my office got sick, I didn't catch it. That was more than 30 years ago. And I am still meditating daily. And I can tell you that I credit that with a greater sense of calmness, less anxiety in my life, a greater level of health. But it taught me the importance and the value of using the attributes of the feminine. Because until then, I had been denying that part of myself in order to fit into that masculine world. And it was the first time I realized that I need to be who I am, or I am going to make myself sick. And next time it could be terminal. And there's value in the feminine, and I have to bring that value forth as an individual and for the value of my corporation. So it was a very important learning lesson for me, as difficult as it was when I went through it.
Well, you know, what a journey, truly, to have gone through so much suffering, actually, for such a long period of time, to, you know, to arrive at the place where, you know, it's like the it's like the dark night of the soul, right? And you come out of it, but it's a whole new you that comes out of it with a whole new level of awareness, a whole new way of being in the world. Because I listened to your story, and it's the story of so many women who are just driven to exhaustion because they're following a male model of operating in the world, which just does not work for us. And we think that's power, and we think that's the way to succeed. And you're one of those lights in the world that, well, first of all, you've been there, done that, but have found another way, another path to experience your success in the business world, in the corporate world, but operating from more feminine models. And I just want to say before, because there are a lot of questions I have for you, Vivian, but, you know, I recently had an interview with an author who wrote a book about the immune system, and he calls it The Elegant Immune System. And in the book, he was referring to one of the stories of a woman who was she was a top professional golfer, and she, you know, strove in business to break the glass ceiling and just worked all the time and, you know, worked through strep throats and never rested, and then suddenly appeared with, rheumatoid arthritis, like, hello, surprise, surprise, right? And as I like to say, and, you know, when I was having that conversation with him, well, it was pretty obvious to me, you can't continue to abuse your body and not listen to your needs and force yourself to push and push and push and think that is a valiant thing to do without your body suffering. So your story, and, you know, I have a story as well, it's similar, of just pushing and not really listening to my body, my cycles, my needs, and my body falling apart. I think that's kind of it's a common story that we hear a lot. So what was it that happened to you after you went through this, you know, deep and difficult process that changed the way you perceived yourself in the workplace and incorporating these feminine values when appropriate?
Well, so what's interesting about it then, Cheryl, is that I started paying attention to what are the attributes of the feminine and what are the attributes of the masculine. And I knew that there was as much value in the feminine as the masculine, although we live in a society that has really tended ever since the Industrial Revolution to be all about efficiency and getting things done, and which is the masculine model. But interestingly, as we're getting more globalized and we are dealing with a lot of different cultures and we have the information age, suddenly we're valuing communication and listening and finding common ground and collaborating, which are the values of the feminine. And so I started realizing that we're having a bit of a sea change, if you will, in the attributes that are important for success. And I started paying attention to men and women who were using the attributes of the feminine. And I watched a man who was our corporation was a commodity corporation. With commodities, if you have too much product and not enough demand, prices fall and companies lose money. And under these circumstances, our board brought in a new CEO, and our CEO was an outsider. He came from not only outside our company, outside our province, but even outside our country. And he was from southern United States. And when he came to Canada, people really thought he talked funny. And he was a U.S. military man, very erect, confident, you know, displayed all the attributes we would think of as being typically masculine, very independent, self-sufficient, bottom line oriented. And he showed up and he looked at the numbers and said, you know, we need to close the mine. We have too much production. Well, people in our province were up in arms. They were just like, how dare an outsider come in and tell us that he's going to close one of our mines? And somebody wrote a letter to the editor of our paper, and they said, this guy cannot manage his way out of a pay toilet. He was livid, and he demanded to know who wrote that letter, and as executives, we were charged with finding out. Well, what we found was that the address on the letter was accurate, and so was the phone number, but the name was fictitious. And the address and the phone number belonged to one of our hourly paid workers. But he didn't write the letter. His wife did. So until that point in my career, I had only watched men who had an advantage kind of dial it up, pound their chest, and wipe out the competition. Like, just use that advantage to vindicate themselves and make everybody else look bad. But instead of that, I watched this guy that until then I'd only seen him be very masculine. He switched and started using the attributes that I had identified as being feminine. He phoned this woman up personally. He invited her for coffee on neutral ground. They met at the Sheraton. And when they got there, he didn't talk and tell her all the reasons why he needed to do what he was doing. Instead of that, he listened. That's a very feminine thing to do. And then he empathized. Again, an attribute that women it's a natural in their toolbox. And then he found common ground with her. And he told her how he was the son of an hourly paid worker. And when his family had to move a lot, whenever there was too much production and the workers got laid off. And when he was 5 years old, he left behind his best friend, Billy. And he never saw Billy again. Well, by the time that coffee meeting was over, she was his new best friend. She put him on her Christmas card list. But more importantly, she went out and told all the other hourly paid workers and their wives that he was doing the best he could do for the entity as a whole. So I watched this man, who was very masculine in his approach, use the attributes of the feminine to turn an adversary into an advocate. And that was the first time that I had watched a CEO use the attributes of both genders. And I realized that all of us have both attributes in us and that we can use them both to our advantage. That had such a big impact on me as to what a good leader really means. Until then, I had just thought, oh, well, you know, a good leader is a man who is, you know, very bottom line oriented. He's very driven and he's going to get the job done. And I thought a woman is going to be more collaborative and consensual. And in watching this man, I realized that we all have the abilities to do both, and that there are times that you want to use the attributes of the masculine and times that you want to use the attributes of the feminine. And we're all better off if we balance them. So I wrote this book, Gender Physics, for women to help them have confidence in bringing forth the attributes of the feminine, and also to identify when it was appropriate to use the attributes of the masculine and how important it was to balance the two. And then, as I was working on the book, and I was actually fairly close to being finished, I was out with my daughter and a number of her 30-something friends, and a young man that was very interested in this topic started chatting with me about it, and then he asked me if we could go for dinner so he could hear more. So we did, and at dinner I told him I had written this book for women. And he said, oh no, men need this book too. We are not happy with the model that we've been handed. I'm a soft guy. I don't necessarily want to do all the things that I've been told a man should do. And I want a book that's going to give me permission to be able to be both. So you need to write this book for men and women, because if men are using the attributes of the women, that will help women as well. And I thought, you know, he's absolutely right. If we accept the attribute in ourselves, then that means we're going to accept it in others. And it means that we're going to get rid of the duality that we have in the world that says that one is above the other, and we're going to see it ourselves as humans, as opposed to one gender or the other. And if we see ourselves as humans, that means that we can use the attributes that are appropriate for that gender or that situation or venue or audience. And so I say it's like drawing water from a tap. If you want to quench your thirst, you turn on the hot, or you turn on the cold. And if you want to have a bath and relax, you turn on the hot. And, you know, you adjust those faucets so that you get the right temperature for the right situation. And that's what I say gender physics is. Each of us should be who we are and bring forth the attributes that are appropriate for every situation in the same way that I saw that boss of mine bring it through. I started then using the attributes of both genders. Does that make sense to you, Cheryl?
Well, it does make sense to me, and I think this is a good place for you to explain what are the attributes of the genders and then how we can learn to find that balance, because we all embody the masculine, feminine. I mean, women innately have more of that feminine energy. Men innately have more of the masculine energy, but both energies exist within both genders. But we need to know how to, we need to understand and identify them more clearly, and then how to express them into the world appropriately. So why don't you just jump in, Betty Ann, and go through some of those attributes so we can clearly understand what those qualities are for both men, and masculine and the feminine.
So masculine attributes are about the individual. It's about differentiating yourself from others. It basically, if you just think about the attributes of a little boy, when you have a little boy, they are encouraged to venture off from their mother and take risks and skin their knees. While little girls, they are encouraged to sit quietly by their mothers and be quiet and be good listeners. And so when you have, if you just think about what you say a little boy is and what you say a little girl is, there's that poem, you know, little boys are puppy dog snails and puppy dog tails, and little girls are sugar and spice and everything nice. It's almost what we tell our subconscious. I find that if I'm doing an all-day workshop with people, I'll start the day off by saying, here's a whole bunch of attributes. I'm going to just put them up on a screen, and I want you to divide them into those that you think are masculine and those that you think are feminine. And I want you to tell me. And by the time we're finished that exercise, we've all put them in categories of what we believe are masculine and what we believe are feminine, because that is what we have been programmed to do from the time that children are born. And that is what creates our subconscious bias. And if I could just take a little bit of a minute here, because I think these two anecdotes help explain. There's a woman named Lyra Brodsky who is a professor at Yale. And she she's a linguist. And we understand that there are some languages that have, they denounce man and or masculine and feminine nouns into categories. So a chair could be a masculine or could be considered masculine or feminine, or a desk or a coffee cup. And those, that would be like French and German and Spanish and Russian. English isn't like that. So what happens is she took a picture of a bridge to people in Germany, and she said, these bridges, here's a picture of this bridge, and I want you to describe this bridge to me. In Germany, a bridge is considered to be feminine. So in Germany, she said, tell me this, what, how you see this bridge, and what do you think people said? They said, it's elegant, it's pretty, it's slender. They imbued that bridge with the attributes of the feminine because it's considered feminine in their language. Then she took it off, that picture of that bridge, to people in Spain. And she said, what do you think of this bridge? Describe it. And they said, you can imagine, it's bold, it's sturdy, it's strong. In Spain, a bridge is considered masculine. So she imbued it with the characteristics of the masculine. So what, this is what happens. We have these ideas about what is masculine and what is feminine. And so that creates subconscious bias that says a woman should act a certain way and a man should act a certain way. And if they don't, it makes us uncomfortable because we've been trained from the time that we're born for little boys to venture off and skin their knees and for little girls to sit quietly by. And as a result, often men then are more apt to take a risk and women are more risk averse. So we have these attributes that we consider to be masculine or feminine, and there's a number of them. I have taken them and I've divided them into categories in my book. And I have one category that has a number of virtues in it, and it's called, and basically what I say is that all of these attributes are strengths if they're used in the right amount, and if they're used in the right amount and they're used with the right audience and situation. But if they're used too much, they become a weakness. My mother used to always say that too much of a good thing is a bad thing. So, for example, in the we, me variable, women are more concerned about the collective. They are more inclusive. They tend to be very other-oriented, concerned about how others are feeling, and they're very consensual. Meanwhile, men tend to be much more individualistic. They tend to be to differentiate themselves, and they are much more about their own self-interest, and they're very autonomous as opposed to the group. What I say, Cheryl, is that this is not necessarily the way men and women are, but it's the way we have been trained to be, and it's the way that we think that men and women are. And if we are too much that way, so if women are too concerned about the collective, or any individual is too concerned about the collective, they tend to give themselves away. Whereas if you're too concerned about being an individual, you can become a narcissist or, you know, very disconnected from others. So what I say is it's important to let all these attributes come forward and to use them all and to balance them. So, and I give a whole bunch of exercises in my book about ways that you can develop your individuality if you're, if you tend to be concerned about the collective, and ways that you can develop your interest in the collective if you tend to be too individualistic.
Yeah, that's so fascinating. When I was a psychotherapist and had a practice, and I'd have these women, and they had no boundaries, right? They would just give to everybody and agree to everything, and anyone who asked them to do anything, they'd be the first one. But they were running themselves ragged. And I gave them an exercise to do, and that was to say either no as the first response when someone asks them to say something, or to say, well, I don't know, let me think about it and I'll get back to you, which gave them time to listen to themselves to see if they really wanted to take on another project, or were they running out, are they doing it out of a conditioned response. And it was a simple little exercise, right? And although it could have felt very challenging for some of those women to actually have to say, at least I'll step back and have a look at it. But it was breaking this conditioning where we just, as women, so many women, not all women, will automatically want to take care, want to do, want to please. And it gave them a chance to really listen to themselves. And many times they realized they didn't want to do what was being asked. And they said no. And that was a transition for so many women that I was working with to really know their own needs and have more boundaries in their lives.
Exactly. So in my book, what I would say you were doing there, Cheryl, is that you were actually helping women establish boundaries, which is a very masculine attribute. So I would say you were helping them establish their masculine energy. As women, we are trained and expected to allow. And what I say then is that allow is the feminine attribute, establishing boundaries is the masculine attribute. Allowing is fine, and actually allowing is good. And a lot of people that establish boundaries too quickly don't allow things to come to them. And when we allow things to come to us, sometimes we get a better result. So there's allowing can be good. It's just that allowing becomes bad or a weakness or a vice when we become submissive and we just give in to everything. And so what you want to do is you want to learn to establish boundaries. And one of the first things is learning to say no. And so then what I say is, in my book, I describe how, okay, you've got a problem here. What is the problem? Have a look through the attributes and see which attribute you are in too much in. Like I'm in this attribute, but I'm obviously doing too much of it because it's creating problems for me. What is the opposite attribute? And how do I do more of it? And that's basically what we're trying to do, is we're trying to figure out how to balance ourselves on an ongoing basis so that instead of saying the other side is wrong, we can say the other side has some virtues, some strengths. I just want to be able to include it in what I'm doing. And so I can be more of myself, because what this is really all about is helping people be more of themselves. What I did in the book is I took all these attributes, which we have traditionally thought of as being masculine and feminine, and I divided them into categories, and I put together an evaluation or a quiz so that you can do this quiz and figure out whether you tend towards masculine attributes or whether you tend towards feminine attributes. And what I find is about 70% of women tend towards feminine attributes, and about 70% of men tend towards masculine attributes. However, I do find that if you go into what I would consider to be a very masculine energy environment, such as a law firm or a investment firm or a construction site or a mine, that you're going to have a much higher percentage of masculine, of people with that will test with masculine energy there. Likewise, if you go into an environment that is a lot more nurturing, like an elementary school, you're going to find even men there test higher in feminine energy. And I also find that younger men who have, especially those who have taken paternity leave, tend to test higher in feminine energy. And so what I'm basically saying is, let's get out of these thoughts about gender dictating who we are as people. Let's be ourselves. Let's be given the freedom to use the attributes of both genders, regardless whether we were named one sex or the other at birth. Because basically what I say is, we're born, we're labeled pink or blue, and with that, all these expectations are heaped on us about the way we should act and who we should be attracted to. And let's just be ourselves. Because when we can be ourselves, people are more attracted to us and we have more energy. I say it's like the 80-20 rule in business. If you're doing business, there's sort of an old rule that says you get 80% of your business from 20% of your customers. Well, I say you get 80% of your energy from 20% of your output, or 80% of your results from 20% of your output or energy, if you're doing what comes naturally to you. And so I want both men and women to feel natural about exhibiting the attributes of either gender and allowing them to come forward so they can be themselves and be just really true to who they are as people.
So what would be your suggestions for people to start to do that?
Well,
go ahead.
Okay, so you can buy my book, obviously, and do the full test or quiz and find out what your natural energy is. But you can also go on my website where I have a mini version of that questionnaire, and you can find out what your natural energy is. And once you find out what your natural energy is, I have a online training program there that's free of charge. Because this for me is a personal mission. This is not a way for me to try to make money. This is me wanting to give women the freedom to bring forward those feminine attributes in the workplace as well as men. I can tell you that after I saw that CEO use the attributes of the feminine as well as the attributes of the masculine, I started doing that myself, and I had really good results. I had one situation where I was supposed to try to get analyst coverage for a company, and I wasn't being successful. And I was using what I would consider to be very masculine attributes. I was, you know, asking for the order, being very direct, giving all the reasons why you should be doing business with our company, and I wasn't getting to first base. And then I decided to switch from the short-term win to the long-term relationship building, which is more typical of the feminine. This was in the early 90s, and I started buying when all men were wearing ties, and all men were wearing ties that were very figurative, like Mickey Mouse goes golfing. And I started buying this guy that I wanted to cover our company ties, funny ties, and sending him funny messages that were always meaningful, that they had some tie to our company. Like I sent him a tie that was electric blue that had yellow corn cobs all over it and said, "How can you not cover our company? Corn is the biggest food staple in the world, and potash is the biggest input." And it became a joke between us. And eventually he started wearing the ties that I bought him, and he started covering our company. And I credited that with me having the confidence to start using the feminine attributes as opposed to just the masculine. But I had another situation.
So,
go ahead. Yep.
No, go ahead, and then I'll comment afterwards.
I had another situation. I had another situation where we bought a company down in southern United States, and these guys didn't want to report to a Canadian, much more a Canadian woman, and I wasn't getting to first base with them. I was trying to use my feminine attributes to win them over, and it wasn't working. And a guy that was a mentor to me came into my office and said, "Betty Ann, you got to take those guys out behind the woodshed, and you got to show them who's boss." So I did. I got on a plane. I flew down there. I read them the Riot Act. Instead of staying for dinner and cajoling them and trying to charm them, I got on a plane and flew home. And you know what? That was establishing a boundary. That was saying, I'm no longer accepting the behavior that you have been giving me, and I'm saying no to it. And I wouldn't have probably done that if I hadn't been able to access my masculine. So that's why I think it's so important to be able to use both.
And that's so valuable. When you're talking, what comes to mind is the ability to be more resourceful, to have access to the different qualities, the different behaviors that would support us and be appropriate in situations. I mean, that's the nature of life, is to become more resourceful, to have more options, to expand oneself, to see that there are different ways you can behave and, ways you can interact as appropriate. So, which is where I guess that comes back to meditation as well, I think about it, because when we meditate, the science is showing us that actually we become more creative, we have less stress, we have more of ability to be be flexible in situations, to flow with things. You know, the benefits of meditation really support all the things that you've been talking about, Betty Ann. You probably agree because you've been a committed meditator for decades now, as I have, right? You know, it's like how do we access more of those qualities? How do we have greater input to be more resourceful, so we have choices in how to behave within our own life and not just within the work environment. So to me, meditation is one of those tools. Do you have some other suggestions? And I want you to just, can you briefly go through the different qualities you have in your book, those variables of the...
I will.
So people...
Yes.
You know, in the time we have some distinctions of what masculine and what feminine qualities
are. Basically what I would say is that if you were just to take them at a very base one-word description, feminine energy cares. So it's about caring, whereas masculine energy is about confidence. So it's about presenting yourself with confidence as masculine energy, and presenting yourself as you really care as feminine energy. And of course, I think we're all really attracted to people who are confident but also care about us. So that's why I think it's important to use both and balance both. But the variables that I put together, the first category is we, me. Feminine energy is all about we. It's about the collective, integration, being inclusive, other-oriented, consensus. Masculine energy is about me. It's about I'm an individual. I differentiate myself. It's all about self-interest and autonomy. Then we have follow lead. Feminine energy is about I listen, I accommodate, I pull information out of you, I support you, I allow information to come to me. Masculine energy is about let me speak my truth, I need to assert myself, I want to push back and tell you why that's not a good idea, I want to direct the action, and I need to establish boundaries. And I think as women, there's all times that we know we need to do that. So we need to adopt the lead attributes as well as the follow attributes. Then I have build win. Feminine energy is all about, it's a flat structure. You know, we all bring our dolls to the dollhouse together and we decide consensually if the dolls are going to go to a ball today or a ball game. It's all about collaboration, forming relationships, about the long term, and about empowering others. Where masculine energy is about the hierarchy. I'm higher than you. I delegate. It's about competition and winning and getting results. It's about having things happen in the short term and command and control. And, you know, there's a time for using these attributes. We tend to think of them as being negative, but we think of them in the when they're being used too much, like I'm a dictator, I'm combative, or I'm overbearing, whereas really, I say when I was at head office, if there was an accident at one of our mines or a crisis, I wanted somebody with masculine energy attributes to step in and get things under control, to form a hierarchy, to dictate who was going to do what, because I knew that was going to contain the accident quickly and that there would be the fewest injuries or fatalities. Then we have the how what. You know, this is where I find men and women, or where I find those with masculine or feminine energy can have the greatest rubs with one another. Feminine energy is all about the process. Let me figure out all the different plans that I could put in place. Whereas masculine energy is, let's just get this done. Feminine energy, you know, they're all about problem prevention, they're risk prevention, where masculine energy is, let's just do it, and if there's a problem, we'll figure out how to handle it later. Feminine energy is about the journey. Let's stop and look at everything. Smell the roses along the way. Masculine energy is, what's the destination? How do I get there as fast as I can? Then we have head heart. Feminine energy is all about intuition, where masculine energy is about analysis. Feminine energy is, I want to feel it. Masculine energy is about logic. An example here is, I say that, you know, blows with a lot of feminine energy, they will say, I don't like that restaurant because I didn't feel good there. Where a masculine energy person will say, the service was slow, the prices were too high, and I didn't like the food. You know, it's very analytical, it's logical. So I would say, as a feminine energy person, try speaking just in facts for a while, because that's a challenge to you to get out of your emotions. Whereas a masculine energy person, I would say, you don't want to be like Dr. Spock, where you don't ever feel emotions. I want you to try to analyze how you think other people are feeling and ask them. And that's a way that you can analyze whether you're reading emotions. Then my last category is the no-go. And for women, it's all about reflecting and dreaming and responding and nuance. Where for masculine, it's about taking action, about doing, about advancing, about simplifying things. I say that's like the general in the control room map. You know, he's in the control room and he's describing, we're going into battle tomorrow. And he simplifies things by saying, we have to go from A to B to C to D. Whereas the feminine approach is all more about the nuance. It's like, well, you need to know that between A and B there's a forest, between B and C there's a swamp. So what we're really doing here is saying both those approaches, the masculine and the feminine, have great value. And we want to be able to bring them forth and say that the values of the feminine are equally important as the values of the masculine. And it doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman to bring them forth. We all need to be using both.
And that is such a great way to kind of bring our, I guess, our conversation to an end, because we've come to the end of the show. But when I hear you talk, Betty Ann, it's so much about finding balance within ourselves again and accepting and embracing the feminine qualities and the masculine qualities for both men and women, and understanding what they are and how to access them and express them and get the values from them when it is appropriate, depending on what's happening in your life. That's the greatest gift we can give ourselves, is that ability to access all of these qualities when appropriate, because we become more whole as we do that, which is obviously your message in what you're doing. And I really thank you for the work you've done. I encourage people to go visit Betty Ann's website, which is Betty Ann Hegge, Heggie, .com, because there's great information, and as Betty Ann was saying, there's a way to assess things and to pick up a copy of her book, Gender Physics: Unlock the Energy You Never Knew You Had to Get the Results You Want by Becoming Whole in Who You Are. Betty Ann, thank you so much for this conversation today and for the great work you're doing in supporting women, but also healing men and women together. So thank you again.
Thank you.
And to all of my listeners, thank you on our journey to wholeness together as we journey each week. I hope you'll be visiting again next week on What Women Must Know. And until then, remember to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.